ओम अज्ञानातिमानंदस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामयं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपं सकृजातं सहगणरघुनाथं वितं त्वं सजीवं सद्वैतं सवदूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादं सहगणलललिता श्रीविशाखं वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधो दीनाबंधो जगतपते गोपेश गोपिकाकांत राधाकांत मनोस्तुते तप्त कंचन गौरंगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यश्च प्रतिदिनं पवनयो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. So I'm really glad to be here again in your association. Thank you for having me. 6 months or something? 4 months? 6 months? A year maybe? Something like that. Almost a year. So last year we discussed the Shikshashtakam. Have you heard of the Shikshashtakam? And don't lie. True. So last year we did half of the Shikshashtakam, like from verse 1 to 4. And now we'll work on verse 5 to 8. And today I think we'll just cover verse 5 because it's thick and there's a lot to cover. Whereas verse 6, 7, and 8 get more esoteric, and I just can't speak that much about stuff that is what I would consider beyond my paycheck. So. Maybe we can recite this. Just so you know, the Shikshashtakam, yes, is, you've heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yes.
So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't write down anything. All his instructions were through his followers, except for 8 verses. Shikshashtakam. Ashta means 8, so Ashtakam, the Shikshashtakam, is the 8 instructions that he personally penned. He personally wrote these 8 instructions. So like anything that's written, you know, you can say so many things, but something that's written has more weight, has more importance. So the 8 instructions, the only written instructions that Lord Chaitanya wrote, are naturally super, super, super important for us who are followers of Lord Chaitanya. So let's read for those of us who know the verse by heart. Ayi nanda tanujarkin karam patitam mam vishame bhavam vudo kripaya tava pada pankaja stita dulisadrisham vichintaya. When I was a brahmachari in the Los Angeles temple, the ISKCON Los Angeles temple, now it's starting to be a long time ago, there was a group of preachers traveling through Los Angeles who were distributing Srila Prabhupada's books at universities. And so we made our rooms in the Brahmachari Ashram available to them. And I remember there was one young man, he was older actually, he was from Israel, and he spent a few days in our room. And when he would go and take a shower, you know, in his Vedic Gamsha, he would recite the Shikshashtakam by heart, you know, in the shower. Yeah. And I was a new devotee, brand new, like Bhakta Chiril, Bhakta Cyril. and I was impressed. I was like, wow, that's cool, you know, that he knows the whole Shikshashtakam and he recites it every day during the shower. So I thought to myself, I'm going to do just like that. So I started learning it, you know, in the morning before the darshan arti, you know, because we had a strict sadhana as young monks. So we'd wake up really early, chant all our rounds before 7 o'clock in the morning. And so if there were 10, 15 minutes before 7 o'clock, you know, I would spend those last 10, 15 minutes before the greeting of the deities learning the Shikshashtakam. And then, you know, for now it's, 20 years or more, I usually recite this Shikshashtakam in the shower, you know. Well, it's a lot of recitation of this Shikshashtakam. Right after Mangalartik, right? Yeah. So for us, as I said, it's like a really important text. It's like the essence of the essence of the essence of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, of Krishna consciousness, and therefore it's important for us. So this verse 5, it goes like this, is a translation in English. O son of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna, I am your eternal servitor, yet somehow or other, I have fallen into the ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. But please repeat, O son of Maharaj Nanda, Krishna, I am your eternal servitor. Yet somehow or other, I have fallen into the ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. So we'll go through the verse and pick up the main themes that each sentence illustrates. So this first point is, you know, O son of Maharaj Nanda. Here's a very, you know, specific conception of God. It's not, you know, O God. It's O Krishna, who is the son of Nanda, of King Nanda. So the Srimad Bhagavatam offers a very specific, you know, theology about God with specific names and specific relationships. A few days ago in Zagreb, I went out to chant my rounds near the main square there. And there's one small road that links the church to the main square. And a lot of students who study theology, like young priests or ladies who study theology, walk up and down that street. So I was carrying a few books of Prabhupada in my little pouch, and I approached this young lady who studied theology. She still had braces in her teeth, and I told her I'm a priest and I represent a tradition from spiritual India, and voila. And I believe in reincarnation. And, you know, so she was asking me, really, so what's your belief of God and what's your belief of the universe, etc., etc. And then she asked me, she said, well, you know, have you ever read the Bible? And, you know, I give a little business card that says, you know, that I studied at, you know, a famous university in England, blah, 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 in theology. And I never read the Bible in my whole life. So I felt a little bad. So I said, yeah, kind of lied. She said, so what's your favorite passage? I said, you know, the story of the prodigal son. You know, the story of the son who leaves the father's home. And I hope that's in the Bible, or is that in a commentary? And then I did mention the Song of Songs, the Song of Solomon, which has some very Madhurya Rasa elements, you know, of worshiping God. Same picture of God, right, as a lover, yes, worshiping God. Yeah, but I think the Song of Song is more of a seeing God as a lover.
Yeah. I don't know this other song, this song.
It's called the Song of Songs. Yeah, okay, Song of Songs. So when I went back to the Bhakti Yoga Center, I downloaded the Bible on audible.com, and now I'm listening to it for the first time with a dramatic narration, you know, and voices and stuff. And we're all devotees of Krishna here, so I can dare, you know, say my few words about comparing, you know, the worldview of the conception of God with Nanda Maharaj and what's there in Genesis, you know? And again, you know, I'm not here to criticize. There's wonderful expressions of bhakti in the Christian tradition. We know that. But, you know, as an insider group, I can just share my realizations that, you know, you read in Genesis, there's this God figure who creates Adam and Eve, and then he just sort of disappears from the scene. And then, you know, Adam and Eve bite the apple, and all of a sudden this sort of almost anonymous God figure comes into the scenario again and says, you know, Isus e Boje, you ate from the apple. You know, what will we do now? I'm very angry, you know. And so coming from 25 years of bhakti yoga, I was just like, really? That's like, what do you do? Like, who are you? What's your personality? And, you know? Whereas in the Bhagavatam, we have a very, very specific idea of God and a lot of descriptions of God. Very rich. The son of Nanda, the son of Yashoda. You know, who is the kind of God we worship? We worship a kind of God who has intimate relationships with an infinite number of eternally liberated souls who love him in very specific ways. And we worship a God who is a great musician, who has great musical ability, and who is a really good friend, who has like these really cool buddies, and they go hang out in the forest together and have picnic together and, you know, take care of animals together, and a God who teases young ladies by stealing their clothes when they go bathe, you know, and then saying, okay, you have to come out of the water without your clothes, and then they get all angry at him. Of course, we believe that it's not that God like wants to, you know, enjoy in a sort of exploitative way. We believe that God reciprocates the desires of every soul. And so these specific exalted souls, you know, the gopis of Vrindavan, they wanted to have God as their lover, right? So this pastime, for example, of Krishna stealing the clothes of the young maidens of Vrindavan has to be seen in this way, that it's actually God saying, okay, this is how you want to have me, then this is how I'll present myself to you, to satisfy them, you know. And the text describes that they were very angry externally, but actually they were very pleased that Krishna was doing this. Even though we're talking about Krishna, and the verse here is Ayi Nanda Tanuja, you know, O son of Maharaj Nanda, I thought of also, just in the same topic here about the kind of God we worship, bring us to Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And there's one particular song which illustrates this idea of a very intimate deity. This song is by Vasudev Ghosh, and he describes Lord Chaitanya as a child. And he describes that in the courtyard of Sachi Mata, the mother of Lord Chaitanya, a little boy Vishvambar, little boy Chaitanya, is playing, and he's hiding from his mother. And then he takes his mother's sari and hides behind it. And she pretends like she can't see him. And she says, "Well, where are you, Vishvambar? I can't see you. And he's hiding behind her. Of course, she can see him. But she's playing exactly like, you know, like a mother would play in this world with her own child. So that's the kind of conception of God that we are operating in. A God who is not just a mysterious figure, but who has active relationships and who has this thing called yoga maya. There's two mayas. Mahamaya is the maya that makes us believe we are our physical bodies, makes us believe that sensual pleasures is the goal of life, etc. Yoga maya is, we learn from our scriptures, the illusion that God Himself allows Himself to fall into. It's His own power, but He surrenders to it. Why? So that there can be spontaneity and mystery and, you know, emotions of all kinds between souls and Himself. You know, I'm sorry to it's not like I speak about the gopis all the time at all, but there's a, you know, the first verse of the five chapters of the Rasa Lila dance. The first verse talks about how Krishna surrendered Himself to Yoga Maya. So in other words, God is like saying, okay, you know what? I'm no longer the supreme controller. You know, my energy of enjoyment, my energy, my Yoga Maya, my divine energy that arranges all these pastimes between me and this, and this, all the souls that are related to me, she's in control now. Of course, it's not that God loses control. It's like saying, can God create a stone so heavy that He cannot lift it? And the answer is, of course He can, and then He can lift it. So similarly, can God create an illusion, a divine illusion that makes Him forget His position as God? Yes, but then He still remains God, you know. So that's the first thing we can talk about, this Ayi Nanda Tanuja, my dear, you know, son of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna. It's a very specific notion of God. And we should be happy to, I mean, at least I'm happy, we're all happy to have this idea of God. Are you satisfied to be worshipping Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj? Duh. Of course. Otherwise, there's, you know, there's a few churches right over there. So that's the first part. Ayi Nanda Tanuja, my dear son of Nanda Maharaj, Nanda, I am your eternal servitor. I'm your eternal servitor. So this brings up a second theme in our discussion, namely the theme of who we are in relationship to Krishna. Who we are. And Lord Chaitanya says, I am what? Your? Yeah, I'm servant of servant. And here, I'm your eternal servant. I'm your eternal servant. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we hear, Jivera Sarup Hoy, Krishnera Nitya Das. Jivera, Jiva, we are Jiva souls. Jivera Swarup, and the Swarup, the function or the form of the soul, is to be what? Krishnera Nitya Das. Nitya means eternal, Das means servant, and Krishnera of Krishna. So we are all, according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're not Croatian, we're not women, we're not men, we're not, you know, our bodies. And on top of that, we are eternal servants of Krishna. And why? Krishnera, again, of Krishna, Tatashta Shakti. What does Tatashta Shakti mean? Marginal. The marginal energy. Beda Bit Prakash, we're one and different from Krishna. So we're marginal. That means we're kind of like, we can be in the spiritual energy or we can be in the material energy. And Prabhupada was walking once, I think in Bombay or somewhere, and some devotee told him, Prabhupada, you know, sometimes I'm in Maya, you know. And Prabhupada said, no, you're always in Maya, sometimes you're in Krishna. So that's our function. To be... Slow down. Okay. Sure. Jivera Swarup Hoy Krishnera Nitya Das. In the Bhagavad Gita, also Krishna talks about how we are Krishna's parts and parcels, right? Mameivamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. We are eternal parts of Krishna. But the Chaitanya Charitamrita gives specific description of what that part of Krishna is. Servant. eternal servant. We celebrated Advaita Acharya's appearance day a few days ago, right? And one thing that Advaita Acharya was very proud to exclaim to the world was, you know, I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya. I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya. I am a servant of the servant of Lord Chaitanya. And a servant of his servants. Do you remember the song from the 1980s? Everybody wants to rule the world. Tears for Fears. Right. So that's what we want to do in this material world. Whereas our teachings tell us that we're actually not, you know, controllers and rulers, but we're actually, you know, not our bodies, and we're servants of God, and servant of God's servants. So that's pretty clear. Son of Nanda Maharaj, I'm your eternal servant. But then Lord Chaitanya says, but somehow or other, I have fallen. So whether we like it or not, this topic touches on the issue of the fall of the soul. I heard Sachinandan Swami once say, if you want to make a Muslim feel uncomfortable, ask him about the form of God. If you want to make a Christian uncomfortable, ask him about reincarnation. And if you want to make a Gaudiya Vaishnava uncomfortable, ask him about the fall of the soul. I think Prabhupada definitely told us, you know, don't worry about the fall of the soul. But we can say a few words about it. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 27, Krishna says that, you know, all living entities are in this world because of what? Because of two things. Because of the young scholar there.
Desire.
Yeah, exactly. From desire and hate. Those two things. If you want my opinion, I mean, I'll tell you frankly, as you know, as a servant friend, I personally like to side more on the idea that we as souls have fallen from the spiritual world. And in this connection, I'll read to you, or I'll tell you a quick story with the verses, the story of King, of the wife of a princess in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And if there's any, you know, reference to the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavatam about the fall of the soul, it's this. So at least you know what is, you know, the argument for the fall of the soul in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And there's really just one passage. So this is not, you know, to try to convince you, but to educate us, ourselves, about what our scriptures say. And there's other references, you know, Jiva Goswami, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, etc. But at least as far as the Srimad Bhagavatam is concerned, there's this very important short passage which leads us to conclude that we have rejected God, that we have, you know, fallen from the spiritual world. And this is not too controversial, because even the GBC made an authorized statement that we did fall from the spiritual world, so I'm not speaking anything controversial here. I'm loyal to the to the party line. But I believe this also anyway. So do you remember the story of King Puranjana, Narada Muni, who goes to see King Puranjana, or he goes to see King Prachinabarhishad? In the fourth canto, Narada Muni, you know, who travels the universe, goes to see this really proud, arrogant king called King Prachinabarhishad. And he sees this guy is so proud, has so much false ego, that if I start preaching to him directly, he's not going to accept my words. So I'm going to preach about him, but telling a story of some other king, but actually I'm talking about him. So he makes up the story of King Puranjana. And who is King Puranjana? He's the soul. So it's the story of the soul inside a big castle. And what is the castle? The body, which has 9 gates. 2 eyes, 2 ears, you know, 2 nostrils, an anus, a genital, and a mouth. At the end of King Puranjana's life, he dies. Normal. I mean, at the end of a life, what do you do but die? He dies, and then Narada Muni tells King Prachinaharbharahisha that this King Puranjana took birth as the daughter of King Vaidarbha, this beautiful Vedic princess. And she married a king or a young prince called King Mayaladvaj, who was a devotee of Krishna, a great devotee and also a king. The Bhagavatam says they had thousands of children, Hare Krishna. And then towards the end of King Mayaladvaj's life, he does what many Brahmins and Kshatriyas did, namely to retire from, you know, business and family life. And with the help of his wife, who was Puranjana in the past life, they go to the forest together. Is it okay at this speed?
Almost
okay. So they go to the forest together. And he does, you know, meditation on Vishnu. And she's assisting him. And the story goes that one day, she's actually giving him a massage on his legs. And she notices that his feet have become cold. In other words, he died. So she becomes heartbroken, fearful about what will happen now. She's all alone in the forest. She can't go on Facebook and message somebody, you know, hey mama, come and help me. And according to the Bhagavan, this is when a Brahmin comes by. This Brahmin guy, out of the blue, he appears. And the Acharyas say that who is this Brahmana? Who does he represent? No. He represents Krishna. He represents Krishna. And these are the words he tells this queen. And she's about, you know, she just pulled her heavy husband's body on the wood. She made of wood, you know, pyre. She's going to cremate him. And she wants to dive into the fire with her husband. And as she's about to do that, this Brahmin comes. And this Brahmin says this. He says, who are you? Whose wife or daughter are you? Who is the man lying here? It appears you are lamenting for this dead body. And then he says this. Don't you recognize me? I'm your eternal friend. Don't you remember that many times in the past you have consulted me? And he continues, my dear friend, even though you cannot recognize me, can't you remember that in the past you had a very intimate friend? And this is the important point now. Unfortunately, you gave up my company. You gave up my company, Srimad Bhagavatam. You gave up my company and accepted a position as enjoyer of this material world. And then he finishes My dear gentle friend, both you and I are like two swans. We live together in the same heart, which is just like the Manasa Lake. Although we have been living together for many thousands of years, we are still away from our original home. And now the last thing he tells her, my dear friend, since you left me, you have become more and more materialistic, and not seeing me, you have been traveling in different forms throughout this material world. So that's the important passage in the Bhagavatam about the fall of the soul, or the rejection of the soul, of God. I don't want to be with you. Adios. And then, who knows the famous singer Gauravani? He was a brahmachari for a few months in Los Angeles when I happened to be there. And I remember once he was talking and he gave the example that you're walking in the spiritual world, you see a beautiful flower, you pick up the flower and you say, wow, this flower would look so good on Krishna's turban. And then you think, actually it would look good on me. Boom! You're in the body of Lord Brahma, in the body of Lord Indra, in the body of an apsara, in the body of a human being, in the body of a dog, the body of a worm, down to the lowest possible microbe, and then back up, you incarnate back to a human form after millions of lives. You meet some Vaishnava or Vaishnavi. They tell you about Krishna. You chant Hare Krishna. You die. And then you're back in the same position with a flower. And you're like, well, actually, it would look better on Krishna's turban. So, would you like to speak about the fall of the soul? Because I would prefer humbly that we don't speak about it too much, because... Is that you want to ask a question about the fall of the soul? How is it possible? How can evil take place in a perfect place? Like, how can it, you know, how can we choose evil in a perfect place? I just wanted to recite the Bhagavatam verses, but is it a question on something else?
I'm always afraid of this. If already this happened once and now I will go back, where is guarantee that I won't do the same mistake again?
Right.
Is this that guarantee? I believe 1000% in Prabhupada. But I'm afraid of this. Is it, can I do?
Again, this is a discussion about the fall of the soul, but...
We go back. Because Krishna said in Bhagavad
Gita, Krishna does say that.
Somebody who comes back never,
never comes back. Yes, that's true. That's true. You know those Prabhupada memories videos? Do you know what those Prabhupada memories?
That exist.
Yeah. Interviews with different disciples. So there's one where one disciple of Prabhupada is interviewed. He was a sannyasi. He fell down. I forget his name. And he describes he was in a conversation with Prabhupada. He brought up this specific point. And according to him, maybe he's lying, who knows? But he said, according to Prabhupada, Prabhupada said that even when you there's always free will to fall. Always free will. Which makes sense philosophically, but anyway, it's a big topic. I think perhaps we can just make it as just one of the themes of this Ainanda Tanuja verse. I mean, after all, Lord Chaitanya says somehow or other. Somehow or other. He leaves it vague. you know, somehow or other, I have fallen where? Into what? Into? Somehow or other, yeah. And which he describes as? An ocean of? Yeah. An ocean of death, right?
Even if I fall, just important is just to get born again in the family of the body. At least as a whatever, you know?
Well, that may not be falling down, that may just reincarnating from here. I think that prayer by Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, my dear Lord, even if I have to come back, let me come back in the house of your devotee, even in the body of a worm, yeah, in the house of a devotee. Yeah. But that means coming from a human form to a devotee worm. Hare Krishna. A Vaishnava. A Vaishnava worm, you know, a worm who has tilak and everything. Hare Krishna. Is it a question on the fall of the soul, Prabhu?
Short comment.
Please.
As far as I could understand, I think we didn't fall.
Okay.
We were placed.
We were placed.
When creating the material world, Karan, Dakashakishu, by you.
I knew I didn't want to talk about this, Prabhu.
Placed us as a seed in material world. Then one side, another side, in many places said, we never, when once come in the spiritual world, we never.
Well, yeah, so there's different views on it, and I wanted to present one. I told you from the beginning, like, this is what I like. I resonate as a, you know, as a soul. I resonate with the idea that I fell, and I think there's good justification for it. And I, you know, if some devotees believe that we didn't fall, I think there's probably good justification for that as well. Maybe they're both true. Who knows? But please, Prabhu, please, let's not talk continue, because really, like, we could talk an hour about the fall of the soul, and I don't think it's really what we should do. Because ultimately, Prabhupada also told us, like, don't worry about it, right? But I think it's okay to quote the Bhagavatam. I mean, it is our main authority, so I don't think I'm being hypocritical by, you know, giving one side of the story, so to speak, and then closing the discussion. I'm just presenting one side, which is the Bhagavatam, which Jiva Goswami says is our final authority. And Prabhu already mentioned this important verse from the Bhagavad Gita, that once we, you know, once we go back to the spiritual world, one never returns. So it does create a paradox. And maybe our theology is quite complicated and difficult to understand on the topic of the fall of the soul. But I think now we've gotten kind of both sides of the story, and perhaps we can move on. I mean, I'm at your service. If you want to keep talking about the fall of the soul, we can do it. But
no, I don't. It's like net catch us. And then we speak about this, but it's not the other topic today, yes?
Yeah, it's just one of the themes. It's just the theme of the, you know, somehow or other.
But there are many devotees thinking that we've never been in the spiritual world.
Absolutely. That's exactly what Prabhu said, yeah.
Is that Gaudiya Math philosophy?
It's interesting that most of the Gaudiya Math, true, we have an intelligent audience here, shouldn't like, oh my God, let's not speak about other currents of Krishna consciousness. But I think it's a proper observation that most Gaudiya Vaishnav groups who are not ISKCON tend to believe that we are going to the spiritual world for the first time. Hari Bol. Okay, if you want to say Hari Bol to it. I like the back home, back to Godhead idea and the Bhagavatam, but once again, it's a sort of a complicated issue, but you can pull the GBC card. You know, I get criticized for being sort of a rebel, so here I'm actually quite, you know, a party liner, because the GBC has a, you know, what's it called? A Shastric Advisory Council. Like a council. kind of like made by the GBC, and they studied this issue years ago, and they came out with a book called Our Original Position. And the official ISKCON conclusion is that we did fall from the spiritual world. So I don't feel, you know, bad about repeating that official opinion, especially when it coincides with, you know, these Bhagavatam verses that really touch my heart. But interesting, interesting observation. So, son of Maharaj Nanda, ontology about who we are, servants, eternal servants of Krishna. Somehow or other, we'll leave it at that, as Lord Chaitanya does, somehow or other, we fall into the material world, which is an ocean of death. So here's some more depressing news. Krishna describes this world as Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam, a place of suffering, which is temporary. And he says, Abrahma Bhuvanar Loka Punar Avartinor Juna. From the highest planet in the universe down to the lowest, all are places wherein what happens? What takes place again and again? Yeah, in the form of
repeated birth and death.
So we definitely believe in reincarnation. It's funny because, you know, for us who have been practicing Krishna consciousness for some years, like reincarnation, belief in reincarnation and past lives is almost like, I don't know, like you speaking Croatian or me speaking French. Hmm? Yeah, it's like normal. It's like, yeah, my past life, you know. But people who are not, you know, practicing bhakti yoga, like, you really think, like, we actually had, a previous life? You know, it's like, I remember that's how I used to think. I used to go to the Paris temple when I was 20 years old. And there was one black guy from Africa who lived in Paris. And he was a new devotee maybe 1 year before me. And in the yard of the house where the temple was where, you know, all the dishes were. So I had the great privilege of washing the dishes. And so I was washing the dishes with this Prabhu. And then I asked him, I said, you know, do you actually, I mean, like when, you know, when they talk about, when these devotees are talking about reincarnation, like, do you actually like mean like a full-on like body in like a previous life? And he was like, yeah. So we forget how, you know, how, I would say fascinating this idea of reincarnation is to a general public. You know the story of, there's this young couple in New York, and, you know, she teaches yoga, he works for a vegan restaurant, and they really love each other. And one day, he tells her, you know, I really love you. I love you so much that if I die somehow in my next life, or somehow, you know, after death, I'll stay in touch with you because I love you so much. And she's like, don't say that. You know, it's true, I do. And then a few weeks later, he gets hit by a car. He dies. She's devastated. And about like 6 months later, she's sleeping, and then she hears in the middle of the night a voice, Caroline, Caroline. So she turns on the light, she recognizes the voice of John, and she's like, John, is that you? And then this voice with no body says, yeah, it's me, I told you. I told you I would be in touch with you, and it took me some time, but here I am. And she's like, oh my God, John, you can't understand, you can't believe how much I miss you. And she asks, you know, what's it like there? And he goes, oh, it's beautiful. It's like it's very green, and there's like all these trees everywhere. The air is very clean. And she's like, and what do you do? He says, "Well, I have some friends, and we're like in a group of like 10 of us, and we take these nature hikes, these nature walks, and then we sleep really well, and then you know we have physical like you know sex, you know, and then we eat these. We're all vegans and raw. We eat these really good raw fruits and vegetables." And she's like listening to this. And he's like, and then we take some more walks, we talk, but you know, simple talk, and then we sleep some more, have some more sex, we eat these really good vegan raw fruits and vegetables, and the air is really clean. And she's like, "John, that's what you do in the spiritual world, in heaven?" And then there's a pause, and then the voice says, no, you don't understand, Caroline. I'm a rabbit in Mississippi." I remember I told this joke when I was traveling with Indra Dhumna Swami in Australia. We went to this, on New Year's Eve, we went to this big yoga studio, and I was like the MC for his Carnaval Spirituel. Indra Dhumna Swami is like a famous monk in the Hare Krishna movement who does these like international festivals. So about 10 years ago, I was the job of the MC, you know, who presents the yoga demonstration, and then, you know, the Swami's talk and the acrobatics, the theater. And I always remember we were like this yoga studio in outside Sydney, and I told this joke, and when I said the punchline, and these are all yoga people, you know, so they're like, you know, "Yeah, I believe in reincarnation, yeah, sure, but you know, like, do they really have a deep faith, you know?" So I said this joke, and then when I said the punchline, there was like 5 second pause, like silence, and then the whole room like, so like laughing like anything. And afterwards, I remember Indra Dhumna Swami said, "What did you think?" Because he didn't see, you know, he said, "What did you tell him?" Like all of a sudden they started laughing so loud. So yeah, we believe in reincarnation. We can even make jokes about that, right? Like I was a watermelon in my last life, and some devotee offered me to Krishna. You know. But we believe the Bhagavad Gita, and therefore we understand that this reincarnation is actually not cool. It's not cool at all. We're forced to take birth, and then in a body we have all sorts of relationship problems, all sorts of health problems, all sorts of, you know, the threefold miseries pertaining to our body and mind, miseries relating to others who give us pain and suffering, miseries relating to the environment, you know, earthquakes, rain, whatever, you know, thunder. And we're forced to take birth again and again and again. And do this again and again and again and again. And according to the Gita, we've been doing this, you know, for a long time, for many, many lifetimes. So Lord Chaitanya describes this an ocean of death. An ocean of death. So then he says, "So please pick me up. Please pick me up from this ocean of death." So here we see something interesting. We see a desire. Lord Chaitanya expresses a desire to be taken out of this ocean of birth and death. And that's interesting because it shows that, you know, we have to desire it. We have to desire it. It's not an automatic process, but we have to desire it. I remember I was in near Atlanta, Georgia, distributing books on a marathon once. And we went into this shopping mall. And we would go to these shopping malls we didn't have cell phones in those days. It's like maybe 15 years ago. We bought some walkie-talkies, you know. And there's like a lot of shopping malls in, you know, in America, because very consumeristic country. So, and there's all these police people, you know, these guards walking in the shopping mall, checking for people who are stealing or whatever. So we would have to like go to some shop and ask them or buy something so we can have a bag of the shop's name, Adidas or, you know, Nike or, and then we put Prabhupada's books in there, and then we just walk around like we're shoppers, you know, and then stop someone and try to, you know, sell them a book, give them a book. And then within, usually within 15, 20 minutes, the police would stop us. And so then we like take our walkie, take our, okay guys, I got caught, let's meet at the car. Then if someone got, one of us got caught, the police would always say, okay, get out, you know. So we'd go to the next shopping mall. But you know, you'd be talking to this nice lady, I'm a teacher of bhakti yoga, we have these fantastic books, you know, and all of a sudden, hey guys, the police caught me, meet you at the van, you know. And you're like, it was quite embarrassing. The reason I mention this is because I remember I had a conversation with this Christian guy, this sort of heavy Christian guy, and he was saying, you know, you guys just chant, you think it's by your own effort that you go to this, you know, to go to heaven. But we as Christians, we believe that, you know, it's by grace alone. It's only by the grace of God. So are we a tradition of by work or by grace? Actually, we're a tradition of grace. But yeah, the idea is we have to at least show a desire. We have to show something to God. So it's both, yeah. So our chanting is our way to express a desire. So it's just like if you're in a well, you can't get out, someone sends you the rope, you have to at least grab it, right? You have to at least grab it. But it's interesting that bhakti is not automatic. And that's why in this verse, in the second chapter of the first canto, Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevayam Bhagavati Uttamashloke Bhaktir Bhavati Nashtiki, there's this word Prayeshu. The verse says that if you just sit and you regularly hear and chant about Krishna, all the bad stuff in our heart is almost destroyed. Almost. And so why this almost, this word Prayeshu? Commentators say that's because it's not automatic. Ultimately, it is by grace. Ultimately, it's God who says okay or no. You know. So it's not that only, you know, okay, I'm just going to, we have to have good sadhana. We have to wake up early, guys, as early as possible. You know, we have to chant our rounds. We have to, you know, try our very best to follow these four regulative principles. We have to, you know, read Prabhupada's books, hear lectures. But it's not automatic. Even if we do those things, it's not automatic. Which keeps God completely independent, which is wonderful. It's not a factory mechanism. You know, you do this, you'll get this automatically. But sometimes I wonder, when you preach, when you give somebody Prabhupada's books, or when you tell somebody about Krishna, when you hold a home program at home, you invite people for kirtan, it's almost automatic that you'll feel happy, isn't it? It's almost like Prayeshu, it's not automatic, except when you help others come to Krishna. And then God is just so happy with you that He fills your heart with happiness. But the point is, it's not automatic. It's not automatic. We have to desire it. Right. Let me read to you a little paragraph from the purport to the second canto, this section. You're with me? Yes. Talking about desire? Yes. So, Prabhupada says here, when Krishna sees that a devotee is completely sincere in getting admittance to the spiritual world, and therefore he becomes eager to hear about him, the Lord acts from within to help him. And then listen to this. The Lord is more anxious to take us back to His kingdom than we can desire. And then he says, most of us do not desire at all to go back to Godhead. And it's true, let's be honest. Like, in one way, yes, we really want to go back. Because otherwise, why are we here? Why are we offering our food to Krishna? Why are we chanting? You know, so we definitely have a desire. But, you know, our desire maybe is a little weak. Prabhupada says, only a very few men want to go back to Godhead. That obviously includes women. So one, you know, we can ask, so how do we increase our desire? And we know the formula. It's an open secret. Just have to hang out, associate with, you know, rub shoulders, literally, with others who have a strong desire. Association. Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva shastre hoy, sarva shastre koi, lava matra, sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoy. This verse says that, you know, even for a split of a second, if one associates with a devotee of Krishna, one attains all perfection, right? So therefore it's so important to come together regularly and hear from advanced souls. So now, you know, the internet, you can listen to Sachinandan Swami, to Prabhupada, I think Prabhupada's in his own category, everyone admits that. But there's definitely, I mean, you basically go where your heart inspires you. You go where your heart, you know, you go with your ears, where your heart leads you. And then you gotta listen, you gotta hear Krishna Katha. Read the Gita, read the Srimad Bhagavatam, listen to lectures. And when you do that, then Hare Krishna becomes easier, isn't it? Becomes easier. So before talking about the last theme, Adam at your lotus feet, I was wondering maybe we could just, if you want to ask any questions, except for the fall of the soul, please. and just any comments? Or questions?
I just want to comment on something that on my mind. It's, I personally do not want to think of past and future lives. I want to somehow to be everything to be spontaneous and. I'm now living in material life, and I have material desires. But I want to make some habit. just to connect everything with Krishna. And when I do that in the way that I'm trying to do things that I like, that my heart wants to do, and it's connected to Krishna, then it, with time, it expands. And more things are connected with Krishna, inside and outside, even if other people don't like it and don't see it. And somehow, I don't know, I think that for me, it's better not to meditate. I'm afraid if I will fall or when I will go to Krishna. I just want to be with Krishna now. And if I have to be born a million lives, more,
so be it.
I don't want to think about it. I just don't want to lose my time now to think about fear.
The future. Of taking birth again,
yes,
and so on.
I just want to do now something.
You just want to be with Krishna now and serve Krishna now.
I am maybe limited in this moment, but I just want to be now with Krishna as much as I can. I will be but I think it's the best, because if I'm thinking a lot, oh, my past life, oh, future, oh, spiritual world, I just want to be in spiritual world as I can now.
Now. You could have spoken this last part, because that's exactly what this is. This last thing is about. Yeah. I think there's no greater attitude to have than what you're expressing. It's like a real expression of bhakti, ultimately.
It's working. Wonderful. Slowly, slow, very slowly, but it's working.
Anyone would like to add on that? You had raised your hand, or?
Peggy,
you got Peggy G. If you like.
Can you elaborate his...
Maybe I can do that to conclude, because... I forget your name, I'm sorry.
Kamala
Sundari basically resumed the last part of the talk. So maybe after the question, we can just... Yeah, I can do that to conclude. In my next life, I'll learn Croatian.
It's very difficult in this world to think about it. We hate hearing that anyone hates hearing that of idea of being a servant.
That was all of it.
It is repulsive.
It's very difficult.
And now the idea that in the spiritual world we have to be eternal servants. It's really difficult.
Oh my God, I have to serve now and for eternity?
So my question is, so how can we actually be brought to accept it? Okay, if I need to be
So how do we bring ourselves to this conclusion, or how do we convince others of ourselves? I would say by experience of serving Krishna as opposed to serving Maya. Like unless you know, we were born pure devotees and we never served Maya ever, which I think is not really the case with most of us, then we know by experience the difference between serving illusion and serving God. We love to serve illusion, but after we serve illusion, we suffer.
We always hope to maintain some, you know, happiness.
Right. But we as devotees, we read in Bhagavad Gita that, you know, happiness in the mode of passion brings happiness at the beginning and suffering in the end. We hear from Sri Shopanishad that two results are obtained by serving illusion or ignorance and by serving transcendental knowledge. So we have a little faith in that. And we've all experienced that it's kind of true. We've experienced that it's a little bit, it's true. Maybe not enough to just say, okay, stop. Like there's a story of the prostitute Pingala in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. And in one day, she's like, okay, stop. Now I serve Krishna. Pasta. Basta. Basta.
Basta. Finito.
Finito. But for most of us, it's a gradual process. It's like we're driving, you know, on an auto beast, how do you say here? An autostrada in fifth gear. And we realize, oh my God, I'm going the wrong way. You know, you have to take the next exit and, you know, slowly get off. Because if you just do like that, I mean, you can. I mean, we see the story of Pingala. She does. But the Brahma Samhita says that it's usually a gradual process. So we learn by experience. We're learning by experience. And also, we're getting more and more relationship with Krishna also. So there's these two things. Yeah, we're getting some ruchi. Hopefully. So we just have to keep just being patient. And if we fall down, we pick ourselves up again. And just continue. Remember I was telling you when I was a new bhakta in Paris, I would go home with the metro with this devotee who was actually a disciple of a Gaudiya Math. And I'll always remember, as we were going back, he would often say that one, you know, big acharya in the Gaudiya Math, I forget who, used to say that slavery, not just servitude, slavery to the absolute is the highest form of freedom. Slavery to the absolute is the highest form of freedom.
Very difficult to accept one.
Yeah.
I mean, this means liberalization, very deep liberalization about relation with Krishna. And
wow.
We need a deep realization.
Yeah, and time.
To go deep, very deep in life.
Mataji wanted to ask a question.
Kako sam si po vremenu bhakti jogi, evo sad se može reći preko 20 godina, tako?
Jutarnji bhakti joga počinjao iz umavljena
na po vremenu je među bhaktama bilo naglašeno, kao strogo nekako naglašeno, konzumiranje čokolade. To je bilo po jednom određenom vremenu, možda, možda evo 15 godina. Tako sam ja to pratila po vremenu. I ja sam se izjasnila svom guru isto u vezi tog pitanja i rekla da mi je teško da vezano za čokoladu odmahnuti i realizirati.
I expressed myself to my guru that it was really difficult for me to abstain from chocolate to remove it from my life.
Iako sam čula po vremenu kao da je izglasano da se može isto da nije više tako taj neki strogi nivo konzumiranja čokolade, da se može
neke vrste. It's voted that it is not such a such strict prohibition.
So what's
hoću reći da ja poštivam i cijenim i volim mog gurua osobu. I on je meni otvoreno ispred svih bahta rekao. Slušaj ti, Madavi, nemoj ti da u sljedećem životu budeš buba. I jel se ti tješiš zato što sam ja GVC pa ćeš imati neke povoljnosti?
I have consoled yourself by me being a GVC that you will have some favorable circumstances because of that.
Tako da ja mogu i dalje reći da koliko god moj guru može meni osobno naglasiti nešto u smislu vezano za čokoladu, da nije pozitivno u smislu jedenja insekti, da čokolada nije čisti proizvod kao na umjetnica. Meni guru može naglasiti da to nije čisti proizvod. Ja opet nema snagu da pratim dovoljno. Dovoljno i isto mogu se boriti po vremenu. Ne znam kojoj budućnosti, kako doći do njegove dobre, ono, poštivati cijelih njegovu instrukciju i ne biti vezan za
čokoladu.
Can you give me just the essence, please, and just give me one sentence.
To je samo jedan mali primjer u materijalnom svijetu. Sad, kako ja vidim stvari, koliko je čokolada nekome problema, kako li problem biti sluga u sluge
Good point. Someone else?
Dharma. I just wanted to add to Peggy's question.
About chocolate?
No. Before, if I can interrupt this chocolate.
Yes.
He was asking how can we conceive that we will eternally have to serve Krishna, but I just wanted to add, and if it's okay, we do that. When you love someone, then you enjoy it. It's not service, you know. Mm. It's just it. You don't have to worry. Just you cannot be there if you don't love Krishna. So that's only natural.
Even if you can say, I love my life, my wife, but I don't like to do all this time, you know, something for my life. For my life.
My opinion, Krishna does not want you to be someone else and to lose your individuality and he just accepts you who you are and you love him, he loves you, and that's just natural.
And also, I mean, as you know, I'm sure your wife is an exalted Vaishnavi, but at the end of the day, you know, there's a difference.
It's very difficult to make especially 4-hour service for my wife.
I would also agree with anybody. I mean, You know, I was serving my guru for four years as his personal servant. You know, he's like a very advanced soul. It was tough sometimes. Even you see servants of Prabhupada.
And you say, I love my guru.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult.
But I think with Krishna, I mean, God himself, that's Krishna. It's like all attractive. So like you said, you know, once you start loving God, or once you awaken slowly your love for God, then naturally he's all attractive. So you naturally want to love him and serve him. Like the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. You have these descriptions of the different devotees of Krishna in Vrindavan. And they're all like totally crazy about Krishna. They're nuts about him. Right? We hear the deer, you know, when they see and hear Krishna, they just get, you know, frozen. The rivers we hear, like the river is flowing this way, and when Krishna goes in there, the river like starts flowing all sorts of ways and brings some flowers and brings it to Krishna's feet with its own waves, right? The baby cows, you know, they're sucking their mother's milk, and then they hear Krishna's flute, and also, you know, they just freeze. That's intense love, intense devotion. And I think service follows love automatically.
He's not married, so he doesn't know what serving wife means. I'm married for quite some time, so... You are serving your wife even when you are not with her. No. She lets you go out with your friends, you're still serving her, so you... He maybe thinks that he will lose his freedom. You know, I have to serve all the time. I will not have time for myself or something like that. But you are still serving your wife and Krishna, and you don't lose your freedom and your individuality. So you enjoy it, you know.
Good point. Another one?
I just wanted to add on this that every one of us should... try to find our own way to have taste in service, because every person resonates on a different way, and I can really say small amount, but when you try what the service tastes like, it's intoxicating. Mm. You want to eat more and more and more. It's like giving you more and more strength, and then when you are thinking, when you go to the spiritual world with Krishna, it will be never-ending service, and it's so wow, you can explode even thinking about it. It's so, I don't know, it's beyond
intoxicating.
Yeah, really is. But every one of us is different, so you have to find thing that triggers you, and then you do it, you know, because I can say to someone next to me, do that, because I have an answer from Krishna in this way, but it doesn't have to be for everybody.
It's an individual experience. Yeah.
So when you catch that thing, just expand your own way, and then you have the taste.
It's 6:25, so let me finish with this last point that actually Kamala brought into the discussion just before we had the question and answers. And it's what you were talking about, this idea that for a devotee, and as Lord Chaitanya says here in the end of his verse, that it's exactly that. We don't, you know, we're not like wanting to get free of reincarnation necessarily. Lord Chaitanya, what does he want? What does he say? Please place me as what? As one of the atoms. Atoms at your lotus feet. This is what one very beautiful thing that distinguishes the Gaudiya tradition from other monotheistic traditions. is this idea that the devotee of Krishna, in the highest sense, doesn't even necessarily want salvation. What he or she wants is to love and serve. In this world or in another world, it doesn't matter. We see this in verse 4, where Lord Chaitanya says, Mama janmani janmani shvare bhavata bhaktir ahetuki twayi. Birth after birth, all I want is to serve you. Now, does it mean that the devotee doesn't, like, as soon as the devotee thinks, wow, it'll be so nice when I go to Krishna, don't say that, shame on you for thinking that. No. Prabhupada once said, all I want is just to go back and eat kachoris with Krishna. Right? Yeah. In the first canto, when Prabhupada describes Narada Muni, first, he mentions how a devotee is motivated by only one desire. And it's his desire to go back to Krishna, to go back home, back to Godhead. And Prabhupada says this awaits him in due course when leaving his body. So it's kind of two things at the same time. In our heart of hearts, yeah, the idea of going to the spiritual world to be with the eternal associates of Krishna, we obviously want that, and it's a healthy desire. At the same time, a devotee is, but you know what, my Lord? I just want to serve you. Life after life, no problem. I asked Ridayananda Maharaj once in Italy 2 years ago. Ridayananda Maharaj is a senior devotee in the Hare Krishna movement who inspires me a lot. And I said, do you want to go back to the spiritual world or do you want to take birth again? And he said, I don't care. I have my job. He said, I have my service. I serve here or I serve there, or if I serve again in the next life. Because the service is intoxicating.
What is his service?
What?
What is his service?
So many services, preaching, writing books, you know.
Yes.
I
mean,
No fear.
I just want to serve Krishna. That's the overriding principle. As a matter of fact, Prabhupada says the Uttama Adhikari comes down to the Madhyama Adhikari for the sake of preaching, which is service. Why? Because it's so intoxicating. So that's beautiful. It's not like, you know, okay, I worship God, but, you know, when I die, you know, I better go back, you know. No, it's like, I want to serve you because I want to love you and serve you. Period. As an atom. And that's the nice thing. It's, you know, humility. Like Bhakti Charuswami, he often says, you know, don't try to become a big devotee. Try to become a humble devotee. An atom is pretty small. So we can just, you know, try to be satisfied with just being a humble servant of the servant of Krishna. Well, on those wise words, should we have 5 minutes more kirtan and then?
Yes, 5 minutes more.
Okay.
We'll make one verse or two words.
One word.
On these wise words of being servant of the servant. Servant of the servant. 4 words.
No, verse.
Oh, that's... yeah, just today. I think it's so big. We just want... Tomorrow we'll do three.
Tomorrow we have some more time.
Speaking of time, I want to thank you for your time. I mean, we're all like of the same generation. I'm not a Prabhupada disciple. So for, you know, for you to sit and hear me, I feel embarrassed and I thank you. So, Jai. Hare Krishna. Hvala. Krishna.